Welcome to Las Vegas Sun Politics on KUNV. I'm Michael Squires, politics editor at The Sun. The Constable's office is coming under fire after a video shows some cowboy-like behavior on the part of its officers. Also, voter registration trends might pose a problem for President Obama's re-election bid. The young voters key to his victory are falling off registration rolls. But first, Steve Wynn wants to build a casino in the Massachusetts town where the NFL's New England Patriots play. Washington correspondent Karin Demirjian joins us. Karin, welcome. We're talking about local politics here on an issue like this, and you spent some time there. What do you think the people there think of the plan?
Well, it's a proposal that's really just a word right now. It's the word casino. There's not a plan that's been put on paper, that's been presented formally to anybody. And the whole idea of a casino is a very, very new thing in Massachusetts. It's never been legal until November when it became legal. And now there's this rush of applications and thinking time, basically, as people figure out to do. The proposal, such as it is for Foxborough, is to build a casino that would basically be in the same general area as Foxborough, the stadium, Gillette Stadium, which is where the Patriots play. And that is something that is giving a lot of people in the town, which is actually a very small town in Massachusetts that was quiet before it ever had an NFL team, great pause and causing a lot of division. Many people are saying that bringing a casino to their town would complicate traffic problems so that every day would be like game day. It would bring crime, prostitution, drugs, all kinds of horrible riffraff that come along with casinos and gambling, and that they don't want that in their backyard. Then on the other side, of course, though, are people that are saying, hey, wait a second, there's tax revenue to be made here. There's jobs to be gotten when a casino comes to town, and we shouldn't be turning up our nose at that just because it's a new idea that maybe doesn't fit into what we like to think is our Puritan ethos here in Massachusetts.
So the usual NIMBY issues that you get with a big project, traffic, the wrong kind of folk coming around. But one of the things you say in there that's kind of startling is that one of the sales pitches is that it could help erase the town's debt. This is a town of 17,000 in Massachusetts, and it has a $100 million debt?
Am I reading that correctly? That's according to the chairman of the Board of Selectmen, yeah, that the town's got $100 million in debt just from various projects that they've taken on, but the bulk of it comes from pension plans. And that's really been the problem across Massachusetts and in many other states as well, that you've got these unfunded pension plans and unfunded health care mandates for retirees, and now that the baby boomers are reaching retirement age, they are retiring as they're entitled to, but then you have that as an added cost on top of everything that you've got trying to cover your current batch of employees. And because we're also in a period of recession that has capped out the money that's available in terms of, money that comes from the state to towns, as well as money that goes from the federal government to states, you've got basically the river having run dry and all these increased obligations as compared to, two decades ago that have been inching up this debt in Foxborough and many towns like it across the state. And that's where they find themselves now.
So you obviously cover Congress typically. You're out covering a local political story. It appears that Steve Wynn has run up against a situation where his project isn't wanted. In Washington, he might have a few avenues to take to try to get around that. What does it look like here? Can he make an end run?
Well, sort of. The problem is that in this particular place, Foxborough is not zoned in a way that could actually accept a project like a casino. I have to admit slight ignorance on exactly what the specifics of the zoning law are that they would have to change to make it, actually able to host that. There are other places in Massachusetts that, while they haven't had casinos because that's never been legal before, have had racetracks, and it's much easier to build a casino in any of those locations because it would kind of just piggyback onto what's already there. It wouldn't cause huge headaches in terms of commercial zoning, which it would in Foxborough. So not only do they have to get the, approval of the town, so to speak. I mean, Bob Kraft, the owner of the Patriots, has said that he will not force this down the town's throat, but he's also saying, I'm not convinced yet that there's enough opposition that I should actually pull the plug. So if that does get approved, if it does happen, and the Patriots would be leasing the land to Wynn's casino project for a 75-year lease for a reported $1 billion is how much it's worth. And then the taxes come on top of that for the town, between the town and the casino project. But if that happens, there has to be a zoning law change within the town of Foxborough, and that would take a 2/3 vote of the town residents who show up for that vote, and there's 11,000 registered voters approximately in the town. So that's why this is actually a problem. This is why they have to go through the general public, and they have to convince the residents there that it's a good idea in order to even be able to legally cite it in that place. So a lot of people are asking, well, why not go someplace else? There's a town down the road, Plainville, already has a racetrack. There's Suffolk Downs in Boston, already has a racetrack. They want it, and they're already ready for it. Well, you know, it's not, those are locations that have a following and a clientele that's already used to gambling in some senses, but they don't have almost 70,000 people already saying, hey, it's a destination that I'll go to on Sunday for a home game. I might there go there for a casino as well.
So you already have a built-in, I guess, people who are already beating a path to the door there. Why not offer them a casino? One thing you run into with the NFL in Las Vegas is they really like to keep an arm's length situation with gambling here. Has any of that come up in talk about this? Or you have an owner of an NFL team wanting to put a casino essentially next door or across the street from the stadium where his team plays?
I mean, that's why everyone's kind of being very careful with the rules of exactly how this goes and why there can't be. I think that's actually why there can't be a direct sale of the land to win. And there's a lease that's happening instead because there's rules in the NFL about profiting off of gambling. And, of course, it's causing all sorts of, you know, snickering jokes among people that go to tailgate at the football game. I went on New Year's Day and had, many conversations with many exuberant fans of football who also say they would be, you know, fans of the casino coming there, too, who say, I'd love it if I could, bet on games like this. Of course, that's not going to happen because that's not part of the deal. But, that's why it's actually very, it's something that people have to be very careful to tiptoe around. But that actually, your point brings up something else that's important to mention here, which is that while Massachusetts has a gaming commissioner now, doesn't really have a gaming commission. There's been no, firm rules that have been written up for how this is all supposed to go and exactly what steps everyone's supposed to take to get through these rules and get through these processes and what the regulations are on the other end because it's so new that no one's quite figured it out yet. So you've got a guy, you've got an idea of an entity, you've got an idea for a casino, and very little else, except for a lot of concern about what that really means once, pen is put to paper and paper is put to digging a foundation.
I'll ask for your odds on the Patriots winning it all, and I know you're a big fan, but before I get to that, I want to ask one last question. You mentioned that this is all new because the state has just recently legalized casino gaming to a limited extent. What were the arguments, I guess, that seemed to convince lawmakers there that this was an all right thing to do now?
Well, I think really, you can't ignore the fact that there's been a recession, which has caused a slowdown all over the country. But this issue and this question has come up before in Massachusetts. It's not a new thing. It comes up probably more than once a decade. But, everybody kind of remembers the last times that we talked about gambling and casinos and how it died so quickly. This time, you've got an example down the road in Connecticut, which is a state that most people in Massachusetts, don't really pay attention to unless they're trying to get from Boston to New York. There are two mega casinos, Foxwoods and Mohegan Sun, that are a huge draw. And they're a huge draw, especially for senior citizens, and bus groups and tour groups go down there. And it's a day trip, basically. You go, but it's a giant casino. It doesn't really look like the Las Vegas Strip because it's in the middle of nowhere and it's an enclosed complex. But it's there, and it's got the whole sorts of bells and whistles, just like a Las Vegas casino would, of shows and restaurants and shops and all that. And it's been, pulling people in from all over New England. And so Massachusetts, when this whole idea first started up, was basically saying, look, why aren't we tapping into that? You could have people going to places that are a lot closer, and you could keep those dollars in the state, you could keep the tax revenues in the state. It's just a drain that's going out to Connecticut. And so that was the momentum that got this going and got them to say, okay, we think we can absorb three casinos in one enhanced, racetrack and slot sort of area. But at the same time, you've also seen that because of the recession, which is why the state needs more revenue in the first place, but because of the recession, that casino in Connecticut is not doing as well as it used to in its heyday. So a lot of people are questioning, wait a second, are we just taking basically like a, winnowing, lessening casino-going population and trying to spread it across more casinos now? What's the point of all that? So there's a lot of soul-searching and identity crisis happening right now in Massachusetts, both for people who like gambling and for people who say, look, we kind of got along okay without it since I don't know, being the sixth state in the union back in the 1700s, we might be okay heading into the future without it now, too.
Okay, and so the odds on your Patriots winning it?
Well, I'm not going to jinx anything. Okay. There's a bye for the first week. Things look pretty good for me.
Yeah, they'll win that first bye week, won't they? Karin DeMerchant is the Sun's Washington correspondent. Karin, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Listening to Las Vegas on Politics on KUNV, I'm Michael Squires. Joining us now are Joe Shaneman, who covers Clark County government, and David McGrath-Schwartz, who covers the state capitol. We're going to look at a couple of local and state issues. First of all, Joe, the county commission met this week and had a couple of issues on their plate of interest. Mm-hmm. Number one is some trouble in the constable's office, the Las Vegas Township constable's office. First of all, what seems to be the problem there?
The problem began a couple of weeks ago when they were considering hiring. They asked the commission to hire two clerical staff or office workers, and the county, I think, behind the scenes had learned of questionable practices, or practices that maybe the sheriff's department and others thought were questionable. And that includes making traffic stops by constables and to collect money for unregistered vehicles and that sort of thing. They carry guns. You know, some of them are not trained, post-certified, which is police operations and standards.
Police officer standards training.
Yes, which all metro officers have. And it just led to a bunch of questions. And then this video turned up on the Las Vegas Township Constable's website. His name's John Bonaventura, related to the judge in the Sandra Murphy case. And the video showed displayed the constabulary in less than a good light.
So showing things such as, give us some examples.
People cursing, some woman talking about wanting to buy shoes and purses.
And this video, is this some kind of gotcha thing, or how did this come about?
No, they didn't commission it. Somebody asked them if they could hang out with them last July to...
Okay.
Get footage to try to create a pilot, try to create something that they could show to a producer to possibly turn what they do into a reality TV show.
Okay, that would make what, three local government agencies with reality TV shows?
At least.
Okay, and you yet don't have one.
No, yeah, okay. I should get. You should all be getting one pretty soon.
Okay, so it appears some less than flattering behavior, at least in one constable office, the commissioners. Want the constable to come in and talk about this. The constable says, I'm an elected official. I don't answer you. I answer to voters. So what happened at the commission meeting this week?
So after viewing the video, the commissioners put an extra agenda item on today's meeting, saying they wanted a report on the constable's office. As you said, the constable said he chose not to show up, and he sent some of his emissaries, deputy constables, who didn't say a lot today. They were questioned about their practices. Just talking from commissioners afterwards, they weren't very impressed. They want more information about what the constables do, where their money's going. And I think they're going to probably work in concert with state assembly people to possibly draft laws to rein in some of the activities of the constable's office. The intent of the state law that made them peace officers and started this fair share program where they could get registrations, enforce registration laws. It's gone too far is basically what they said. They want to create a law that would stop them from stopping, you know, making traffic stops and that kind of thing.
Now, David Schwartz, if you'll allow me to be so informal as to not use your middle name, the legislature, the constables went up there and they got the authority to go after motorists who live in the state but have not registered their vehicles in Nevada, which is it's kind of been the white whale for a lot of people going after lost tax revenue.
It's always the sense that, you know, people move here but never re-register their cars because it's cheaper in California or Oregon in particular. And so it's always sort of the perennial big issue for a lot of sort of second-tier legislators who get really worked up about it.
And anyway, so the question I was going to ask, though, is in the lobbying and in the discussion and the hearings on that bill, was there any concern that you might be creating a situation where the constables, who are essentially like glorified process servers to this point, would then be pulled more into a law enforcement role?
No, I mean, we're pretty myopic up here. As far as, you know, we never let the fact that by solving one problem, you might be creating another, get in the way of a good hot button issue or a good issue. And it is a real issue. I don't mean to dismiss it or by calling it a second tier issue or second tier lawmakers. You know, I think you can see it if you drive down the street and you see the cars who aren't registered here all the time. And it does go to this fundamental idea of taxes and how do we fund government and are we paying our fair share. But the issue, at least that I recall, of establishing this sort of, you know, someone described it as a real-life version of Reno 911, but based in Las Vegas, I don't remember that issue coming.
The Northerners weren't jealous at the thought of that we'd have our own Reno 911?
We're getting back into the North-South debate. Do we really want to go there?
No, I don't know, probably not.
I don't know. I remember Bobby Gronauer for a long time was the constable, so maybe it is sort of a personality-driven office. I don't know, Joe.
Well, there was a difference today as well. It wasn't just the commissioners calling out the Las Vegas constable. It was other constables from Boulder and North Las Vegas and Henderson who ripped what has happened over the last 12 months. So I think Bobby G and those other constables sort of pat themselves on the back for cleaning up a office that historically there have been historical problems with that office over the last 20 years for cleaning it up. And a lot of this has less to do really with the traffic stops, it seems like, than the perception that this office is sort of run amok. It's really, you have to see the video, which you can't find online anymore, but you can find on our website.
And where might be that website?
That's at www.lasvegassun.com.
Thank you, Joe. So where does this go from here, Joe? What did the commissioners do? Did they decide anything today, or they're just...
No, they're going to wait for an audit that the county is engaging in right now to be finished. It will go to an audit subcommittee in about 30 days. At that point, they'll go over it, and then they'll bring back the findings to the commission. At that point, the commission is going to... I guess they really don't know what they can do. They really can't limit the functions of that office by themselves. They do have the power to abolish the office by themselves and incorporate them as part of the entire Clark County. But I think they're going to wait to see what that says. They're going to work with probably Assemblywoman Marilyn Kirkpatrick on future legislation and see where it takes them.
Getting to a real serious issue, another ordinance that they're looking at would make it illegal to feed the pigeons here.
Mm, I know
I know that would rule out one of your favorite hobbies, but
can I just jump
pigeons
in?
Pigeons are people too. Let's just put it that way.
Yes, David, please jump in.
I broke the story when the city of Las Vegas was going to ban feeding the homeless people.
I remember that,
and I portended this with my lead, which was something to the effect of, you might be able to feed the pigeons, but you can't feed the homeless people.
Now you can feed neither.
And now you can feed neither. So anyway, I just wanted to pat myself on the back as we talked.
That was an awesome story. I remember that lead.
We all do. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but Commissioner Chris Giunchiglianti said that this is something that people call her up and say, you know, this is causing a problem.
Yeah, well, just imagine if you're in your neighborhood, your neighbor every day puts out
pigeons. I don't have to imagine it. I've seen it, yes.
And there's like a flock of pigeons right next to your house, and then they roost on your house. They crap all over your house. And people hate that, I guess.
Put it delicately.
So she had introduced an ordinance to ban the feeding of pigeons. Today she got opposing views from some constituents and questions from fellow commissioners, and she wants to wait a couple of weeks, sort through the questions, and then they'll bring it back in 2 weeks and probably take a vote on it. I think it'll pass. It'll just be there'll be some caveats in there to ensure that some people aren't going to get arrested for accidental feeding, that the animal control isn't going to go into people's backyards and watch to see if, you know, it's going to...
just happen to leave a loaf of bread in the road and the pigeon happens to come along and eat it.
Let's just say it's not really going to be enforced.
Yeah.
It's really more of a symbolic matter. They don't want people going to jail for 6 months and getting fined $1,000 for feeding a pigeon, which is what they could ultimately get penalized for as the current ordinance reads.
Yeah. Ooh, wait, but what about my bird feeder?
Now, you got a bird feeder. I don't think the pigeons can get on up there. Those pigeons are usually huge because they get fed illegally so often. What kind of bird feeder do you have?
What was that?
What kind of bird feeder do you have?
Devolving
we don't have bird feeders up here. We have bear feeders. We just feed the bears.
Oh, well, I had a hummingbird feeder once. Now, not those regular birds could get into it.
You quote Christian Cagliani saying, look, I have a bird feeder. So, I mean, I don't know. I can recognize a pigeon, but I don't know their behavior. Can they not hop up and...
Well, have you ever seen a pigeon jump up on the edge of one of those tiny bird feeders and sit there and peck away? They like sit in the road right in front of your car just before you're about to hit them, and then they fly away and somehow manage never to get hit. That's where they eat. They eat the detritus and the crap on the road.
You're listening to Las Vegas on Politics on KUNV, not the Nat Geo channel here. We're going to look at some registration trends, some voter registration trends that could...
May I just add something before I get calls?
Create some troubles for President Obama's reelection efforts. Yes,
by I love way. Flying... animals. I don't consider them flying rats.
I think we all do.
Yeah.
David, what is this? This is a study looking at what's happening and apparently shows young voters dropping off the rolls. Why is that a problem for President Obama?
President Obama heavily carried the youth vote back in 2008 when he first won election. By some exit polling, two-thirds of young voters, 18 to 24, voted for President Obama, and there's a study out, an analysis that shows that many of these young voters are dropping off. Since 2008 election, there are 117,000 fewer voters today than in 2008, and of that drop, 43%, about 50,000, were youngsters. And that makes me feel old calling those.
Yeah, it made us all feel old calling them youngsters. So I know this study is probably just looking at the numbers, but any sense from experts or people who have studied this further as to why these young voters would be dropping off the rolls?
Well, I talked to the Clark County Register of Voters, Larry Lomax, today, and he said that they have inactivated voters who have moved, who have changed address, and historically a higher percentage of those people who move, you know, young people are more mobile than us old timers, I guess, if I'm going to call them youngsters, we're old timers.
So more mobile, any other reasons behind it? I guess the question I'm kind of trying to get at, and maybe it has nothing to do with this, but I know that the Democratic base, certain elements in it have been disappointed to a degree with President Obama, not that they're going to vote for whoever gets the Republican nomination or any third party candidate, but maybe are a little less energized than they were in 2008.
Yeah, I mean, 2008 was a huge Democratic wave year. A lot of excitement among the base, a lot of optimism about President Obama or candidate Obama at the time. 2010 was clearly the pendulum had swung back to Republicans. Right now, you know, I'm still trying to feel out whether it's going to be a Republican wave year or a Democratic wave year. Republicans are pointing to signs of some slight voter registration advantages that they're starting to see as signs of optimism that they're going to do well in the Heller-Berkley race, in the presidential contest, and in some state Senate races where registration is tightening up.
So what's the takeaway at this point if you're President Obama's team?
Well, they tell me they're not worried, that they are just now getting their voter registration machine started. And right now, my big question is, when Republicans settle on a candidate, when they have a presidential candidate, how well can they organize in Nevada? Because Nevada's Republican Party has not been well organized, has not been competitive with the Democratic Party machine. So I think that's the big facet to look at.
Okay, shifting gears a bit, but staying in presidential politics here, Brian Sandoval endorsed Governor Rick Perry of Texas, who's running for president as a Republican, did that early. Some saw that as a mistake. Maybe at the time it looked smart, as Perry was kind of surging in the polls, looked to be a front runner. but then he faded pretty quickly. But Perry's continued to campaign, and of course the Iowa caucus is this week, and Governor Perry's had a lot of his supporters, these his big individuals who've endorsed him, people like Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal and some others, on the ground for him in Iowa. How about Governor Sandoval?
No, he's either up here on top of my head or pretty close to it. I'm in the basement of the Capitol. I'm being figurative, by the way.
Yes, please.
He's staying here in Carson City, and it's not clear why. His political advisors aren't really saying, but, you know, this does follow this pattern that the governor has had of, yes, he came out early, he endorsed Governor Perry. Governor Perry had some horrific debate performances. And since then, Governor Sandoval will say, well, I endorsed him because of a friendship, and this was a personal endorsement for personal reasons, not political. Now, to take a jaundiced eye to this, if this had worked out, you know, we'd be claiming, and Governor Perry had surged in the polls, then we would have been declaring this a great political move, but being hindsight 2020, it looks like a big bust.
So not campaigning, did he say if he was intended to do anything on his behalf going forward? I mean, and I guess he didn't talk to the governor, his team, Mike Slanker, one of his advisors.
And that's still to be determined. I mean, is Governor Perry even going to be around come February? You know, I think the next few days will show that. South Carolina is where Governor Perry is declaring his important stand.
Does picking the loser affect the governor in any way?
Does what?
Picking a loser affect the governor? Does it make people think he's got impaired judgment, or I don't know? Does it? Do you think it affects how people view him in any way? I don't think it really matters.
It could have helped, and I think in political circles, though, it does speak to, I think there is a drop off in sort of the political capital that the governor wields. You know,
who's
being hyped up as the magic endorsement, as the most powerful, the most coveted endorsement in Nevada, and it did diddly squat here.
We have just about a minute left, but there's some other big presidential endorsement news out this week. Dennis Hoff, easily Nevada's best-known brothel owner, is endorsing Ron Paul for president. David, should we expect a big Ron Paul bounce out of that?
Yes, it's going to be huge. No, he endorsed him back in 2008, and you know, Ron Paul did do well in Nevada, though I'm not sure Dennis Hoff can take all the credit for that.
Well, I'm sure he'd like to, though.
But, you know, this isn't the first foray of the brothel industry into politics and policy. From what I understand, some of the girls who work out there, the women who work out there, protested the bear hunt and offered if the hunters who had the tag...
Is that a euphemism, the bear hunt?
If they had the license to kill a bear and they turned it in, they could have gotten free.
This is family radio, Jerry. We're going to have to leave it right there.
Hold on. The Packers, I think the Packers will win it all. Let me just put that out there.
David McGrath-Schwartz covers state government for The Sun. Joe Shaneman covers county government. You can follow their coverage and the rest of The Sun politics team at lasvegassun.com/politics. I'm Michael Squires. Good night.